D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Derek Mason, Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Sportsnet NHL Insider, Elliot Freeman, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, I hesitate to say this, but I'm going to do it. Is this the year for the Toronto Maple Leafs? Because they look wildly impressive through two games against the Florida Panthers. What have you made of the Maple Leafs in round two so far?
Adam, if they lose, it's going to be your fault.
I'm willing to take the blame for this.
They look really good. And, I think the one thing that appears to be different, and I would say appears because you got to win four, and this Panther team hasn't given a bite yet like we expect them to give. But you got to win four. The one thing about them is they don't panic. They're calm. Like their coach, Craig Berube, like game one ends with their goalie injured, sick, likely in concussion protocol. And, you know, some of their fans screaming for blood. They want to go attack Sam Bennett in his hotel room. And Craig Berube is like, no, we're not doing that. We're going to worry about winning the game. And all of our focus is going to be on that. And they went out and they won the game. And there was plenty of opportunity in that one to fall apart. They didn't do it. They look different, Adam. They seem different, but they still got to win two more.
The NHL draft lottery was earlier this week, and the worst-case scenario presented itself for the Nashville Predators. They fall two spots from number three to number five. And, Elliot, as you know, we don't see a lot of NFL draft-style trades in the NHL. I think of the trade we saw between the Cleveland Browns and the Jacksonville Jaguars, so the Jaguars can move up three spots from number five to number two. We don't see that a lot in the NHL. But The Athletic notes that seven teams in this draft have multiple first-round picks, including the Predators, who have three first-round picks. Do you think there is a possibility of there being an NFL draft-style trade at the top of this NHL draft next month?
Well, I think there will be attempts at it, Adam. It's very hard to see. Like the one thing about number one, I can remember a pick with a trade with the number one pick in 2003. And Marc-Andre Fleury, who was just retired, Pittsburgh did not have the number one pick that year. They had the number three pick. And it was Florida 1, it was Carolina 2, and it was Pittsburgh 3. And Pittsburgh wanted to get Marc-Andre Fleury. And they were worried he wouldn't last to the third overall spot. And either one of the two teams ahead would take him or somebody would leapfrog them. And they made a trade with Florida, and Florida agreed to move down from 1 to 3. I have to remember what Pittsburgh had to do that. They obviously traded them another pick. But the thing I remember that happened in that was Rick Dudley was the GM of Florida at the time, and he said he was not making that deal unless he knew he got the guy he wanted. And the guy he wanted was Nathan Horton, who was a power forward who had to retire prematurely because of back injuries. But he knew, like, Pittsburgh had to tell him who they were taking, and they were taking Fleury. And he was convinced, he knew, that Eric Staal was going second to Carolina. And that's the only way he made that trade. The year that Nathan MacKinnon went first overall, Calgary had three first-round picks. They had 6, 22, and 28. And they offered them to Colorado for Nathan MacKinnon, and the Avalanche said, no, we're not doing that. And it turned out to be a wise move. So it's not impossible, but it takes a lot. Now, I think the thing that adds to the intrigue of this, Adam, is that Mike Greer, who's the GM of the Sharks at number two, he's already said he's open to it, to moving his pick. So he's going to listen. And I think the other thing that is key is that there's no consensus number one. There's a really good defenseman, Schaefer, and there's a bunch of really good forwards. But I think the number one depends on who you talk to. So I think the key in this situation, Adam, is that it's going to come down to who grades who where. Number one, who's really willing to move up? Who's really willing to move down? And I think what you could also see is movement depending on where people think other teams are leaning. And, you know, I'll say this about the Predators. I think Schaefer, like I think you guys are looking for a center. The one thing I think Trotz and the Predators can look at here is I think you're going to be in position to get one, even at five. I know it wasn't the ideal outcome for you. I think you're going to be in position to either get one or move somewhere that you can get one. So I still, even though it was bad, I don't think it's a terrible outcome for you.
Elliot Friedman is with us. So Elliot, along those lines, I think I asked you this before the regular season ended, but I'm sure Predator fans might vote a certain way after seeing the process firsthand, having not been in it for a long, long time, at least not with a chance to get the first pick. But you had two teams win, basically, and move up the maximum 10 slots. And so do you think that is something the league is nodding and saying, yes, this is why we have this, this is a good system? Or do you think there's a lot of pushback by teams saying you shouldn't be able to move up that many spots?
Well, the thing is, Willie, the rules already changed a couple of years ago. Like, it used to be that you
right.
could move up anywhere. So they've already changed it. They've gone to a max 10. And also what they've done is they've made it so you can only win the lottery twice in 5 years, right? So now there's a strike, there's an X in that checkbox, in that box for both the Islanders and the Mammoth. I got to get used to calling them that, the Mammoth. So now they can only do it one more time in a 5 year span. So I don't know what people can keep complaining about unless we get rid of the lottery entirely, because they already changed the rules a couple of years ago.
Right. It all depends on who you ask. By the way, I was wondering, Elliot, if you're going to go with the Mammoth, or are you going to try to still push the, just sort of the slang term now, the Utahns?
You know me, I don't give up easy, Willie. I'll probably still call them the Utahns. Willie, we did use the pack, by the way, of Carrier getting hit too much, and Kelly Rudy was looking at it like, oh my God, what's with this guy?
Yes. I did hear that, and that is something to watch, because we're all huge fans of Alex Carrier for sure.
Yeah,
but man, he has been trucked. Yeah. He has been trucked more than once in his career, and he's not the biggest guy. Elliot, I'm curious if you had, and you had to invest a lot of time. I think we would all agree. We played Barry Trotz's press conference from start to finish here on our radio station here, 102.5 The Game. And he had a lot to say, as we know. Did you have any takeaways from his end-of-the-year press conference that stood out to you?
Well, I think that it's pretty clear to me that there's been a lot of conversations behind the scenes about what went wrong this year. And, you know, I think the thing is, like, Barry Trotz had to answer for it publicly, and I think he had to answer for it privately, too. Like, I think there were a lot of meetings in the organization about this year was really disappointing. And how are we going to make sure that doesn't happen again? So I think it's very important for all the Predators fans to realize that as disappointed as they were, whether the I had some Predator fans say to me, like, the organization, like, they sent me a couple DMs and they're saying, well, it doesn't sound like much is going to change, or it doesn't sound like they think it was that bad. I can assure you, they thought it was that bad. And I think that one of the things that I really think it was important for Trotz to show that he wasn't necessarily going to pin it all on the head coach. That, now, I'll say this. You know, he said Andrew Manette was coming back. It's not the 100% the safest position. I think everybody knows that if the team gets off to a rough start next year, it's going to be uncomfortable for everyone. It's going to be a problem for everyone. I think I would expect that Trotz will continue to see, like, is everybody happy? Does everybody want to come back? I think he'll investigate what else is out there. The draft is huge for you guys. I would expect he's going to go hard after getting one of those top centers, and he'll see the way it unfolds. But, like, even though Barry Trotz came back and said, Burnett's going to be the coach and we're going to make ourselves better, I think everybody understands there are consequences if it doesn't start better next year.
One thing that wasn't talked about a lot, but he did mention, I thought it was noteworthy, is, and the Predators probably are not as better equipped to, as well equipped as other teams in terms of cap space this year. They'll pay the freight of the Duchesne bill and the other parts of it this year, and they'll be in good cap space territory the next year. But he said, to improve our hockey team, we're going to look more at hockey trades and not at the free agent market. He was quick to point out, he made it a point to say, the free agent market doesn't look very bountiful this year, even if you did want to go shopping.
Well, I think also, too, that you can't do that all the time, right? As you guys learned this year, you can go out there and you can spend a lot of money and you can win the day as the Predators did. But if it doesn't make sense and it doesn't work out, then it, all of a sudden it's a problem. Like I think that as much as anything, what the Predators are looking at is how can we make Stamkos feel better? How can we make Shea feel better? How can we make Marchessault feel better? And how do we build around them? I just don't think you can do that all the time. Now, if a great player drops on your lap or somebody drops on your lap that you feel you have to go after, then you change your mind and you adjust, right? However, I think in a lot of cases, what you have to do is you say, okay, this year is our free agent year, and this year we're going to go after something else. I think that what it probably says is that Trotz feels he can't go to that well all the time. Number two, as he said, he probably doesn't feel it's as good as he thinks it can be. But also, I think at certain amount of points, like, it was clear the mix wasn't 100% this year, and he's going to try to change that mix a bit. I think there's always room for hockey trades out there. You know, depending on what you're willing to do, only one team leaves happy. There's a few other teams like Montreal. They made the playoffs for the first time in a long time. They'll sit there and say, okay, we think we're going in the right direction. But there's usually about 20 teams that aren't very happy out there, Willie. So you look and see with one of those other teams and see what you got. There are always players who say, oh, all of a sudden the path doesn't look good for me here. It's very key to go out there now and figure out, hey, who's somebody that's not in a good spot in their current place who could be a better – there's more opportunity in our place. And I think that's what he's got to do. He's got to find the good mixes out there.
Joel Quenneville now officially has been hired by the Ducks. I think you guys have been tracking this for a good while now. So what do you think about the fit? And do you think if the Ducks had not hired him, that he would have been hired by somebody during this offseason?
I'll say this. I think the Ducks were the team that was most motivated to hire him, Willie. I think they were the team that wanted him the most. I think from the moment their coaching search began, he was the guy that they wanted to get. And they talked to some other people, but I think Quenneville was always number one on their list. So I'm not surprised it ended up there. I have mixed emotions about this, obviously. One of the things, whenever I think about the Chicago case and what happened there, there was another person who was outside of hockey that was affected. And that's the thing I always think about the most. Joel Quenneville obviously paid a very big price to his profession and his reputation. And he has no room for error. He's got to show he's learned from that. I also feel that, the person who made a lot of the decisions there in Chicago has never answered for them publicly. And, Stan Bowman got a chance to show that he learned his lessons. And Joel Quenneville now has the opportunity to show he's learned his lessons. But he has to understand that there's no runway. And he can't make any mistakes. But I'm not surprised Anaheim hired him. I think he was always the number one guy on their list.
Elliot, before we let you go, another day, another hat trick for Mikko Rantanen. The first player in 40 years with consecutive hat tricks in the playoffs. Broke a record last night held by Mario Lemieux. He has factored on Dallas's last 12 goals. And we know the whirlwind season that Mikko Rantanen has had, but over the past four games, 8 goals, 14 points. As you're watching him play, what have you seen from him to get to for him to have such an explosion of offense?
Well, I think he's, well, first of all, he's a great player. Like, that's number one, Adam. But number two, it's like he has points during games where he's very quiet. And then he has like three or four shifts where he's just going to destroy you. And, you know, what it reminds me of, Adam, is always bet on talent. You know, some people take longer to figure it out. Some people, like, his world was thrown into chaos this year. And once he was settled and once he was comfortable, it's a reminder that even the most talented people, Adam, if they don't have a clear headspace, they can't function. And he was thrown into chaos this year. And now that he's somewhere he wants to be, he's a guy he can have, like, for example, game 7 of the Colorado series, he can have 40 quiet minutes, and then over 20, he can kill you. Like, that's what I'm seeing there. I'm seeing an elite-level talent who's comfortable, and if you give him an inch, he's going to take a mile.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, joining us on the program, presented by Old National Bank. Get old, Elliot. Great stuff. We look forward to your coverage on Sportsnet as the playoffs continue, and we'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a great week.
You as well. Elliot Freeman on the program. 615-737-1025. By the way, Ian Safar has texted me to tell me that Jared has called Rantanen Remax Rantanen because he called him a real estate player with McKinnon. I'm not witty enough to come up with a dig, but just some fuel for you. We're going to talk to Jared about his Mikko Rantanen dig near the end of the program. And Derek has a bone to pick
he
with Jared
can't let it go.
About his
it's
Edgerrin like, James take.
No matter how somebody proves him otherwise, he digs in. He don't care.
He doesn't. He digs in. He does not ever say, you know what? Derek, that was a really good point, and you've changed my thinking on
exactly.
this.
He just
doesn't do that.
Before we get to Jared, he did say something the other day on his show as it relates to the Predators in the NHL draft that I do want to get into. I asked Elliot about it, and I want to discuss it further, and we'll do that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Always a pleasure to catch up with Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet, a busy man all of the time, but especially during the Stanley Cup playoffs. So Jared was talking the other day about the fallout from the NHL draft lottery, the Predators falling from number 3 to number 5. And as Elliot Freeman mentioned to us, the San Jose Sharks, who have the number 2 overall selection, are open to discussing moving that pick. And Jared was talking about what it would take in his mind to move up from number 5 to number 2. And this was the proposal that he tweeted. He may have said something different on the air, but this was the proposal that he tweeted to move up from number 5 to number 2. The number 5 pick, so you swap the picks. Tanner Molendijk, Luke Evangelista, David Edstrom, and Tampa Bay's 2025 first round pick, which on paper is a ridiculous amount to move up from number 5 to number 2. I would do it for less if I were the San Jose Sharks. But as I said to Elliot, you don't often see those Jaguars, Browns style day of draft trades to move up spots. I did this research, Willie. Since 2010, would you care to guess how many times a top 5 overall draft pick, so either number 1, number 2, number 3, number 4, or number 5 overall, how many times would you venture to guess that pick has changed hands since 2010?
I'm going to say one.
It has changed hands 3 times since 2010. In 2020, the Ottawa Senators had the Sharks' 3rd overall pick from the Erik Karlsson trade, and the Ottawa Senators drafted Tim Stützle with the 3rd overall pick. In 2019, the Colorado Avalanche had Ottawa's 4th overall pick in the trade involving the Senators, Predators, and Avalanche, the Matt Duchene-Kyle Turris trade. So Colorado had Ottawa's 4th overall pick. They took Bowen Byram. In 2010, the Bruins ended up with the 2nd overall pick from the Toronto Maple Leafs in the Phil Kessel trade. And the Bruins took Tyler Seguin. So,
but you know what, Adam? I don't count those. I don't count those because that's not the
team
that had the pick. That team got the pick way, way after that the deal was made.
Right.
Right?
My point is that those are the only...
So that's very different than the scenario you're painting.
Correct.
With Jared.
Correct.
In that Mike Greer is shopping around the second pick.
Right. My point is that top five number overall...
People don't trade those picks.
That's my point, is that the only time top five overall picks have changed hands in the NHL draft since 2010 is when it's involved in a bigger deal involving a premier player. That's my point.
Yeah. So it does seem to be a very different mentality in hockey, that because you're drafting 18-year-old players by and large, either, you know, some of them aren't even 18 yet, that you pretty much stay in your slot, and there are a handful of players that appear to be truly ahead of the pack at that age. And after that, it's a crapshoot. I think when you get down to it, even you know, certain years are different. I think 2013 would come to mind. 2003 comes to mind. And some people believe that the draft most recently held in Nashville a couple years ago was deeper than most. But most years, after about the first five or six picks, it's wide, wide open who does well historically. And so when you do have a top five pick, usually you're taking from the group of players that is a small number relative every year that appear to have separated themselves at that age.
Now, Barry,
is that a fair assessment when you compare that to football, where you're drafting 21 to 24-year-old players who there's a different maturation process? There's much longer of an evaluation process.
Yes, I would agree with that. And Barry Trotz has tried to move up in the draft before. If I recall correctly, at the draft in Nashville, he tried to move up with the Sharks, coincidentally, who took Will Smith. And I believe Yaroslav Askarov was dangled in that deal. And, of course, Yaroslav Askarov ultimately ended up in San Jose in a different trade. But Barry Trotz has tried... Again, correct me if I have these details wrong, Willie, but Barry Trotz has tried to move up before. It just very rarely happens in the NHL.
He basically acknowledged that he tried, and he even said it was uncomfortable, what he offered. So we never got into the specifics. He wouldn't even confirm that it was Askarov, but it was widely rumored on the night of that draft. You know, it was a big, big buzz that it was reported that he had dangled Askarov and other things to try to get one of the top two or three picks, and nobody bet. That's how valuable those picks are to those teams. And we're talking about guys like the Blackhawks were going to trade the first pick, which was Connor Bedard. But then there was Will Smith. There was Carlson, I think, is the other.
Leo Carlson, who went to Anaheim.
Yep. Those were the kind of guys. And Adam Fantilli would have been the other one, right? I think he was looking at those guys, all of which look like they're going to be really good number one centers. And those teams stood pat, even though Barry Trotz was offering a bunch of assets for that.
One texter says, unrelated to this particular topic, but about the Predators, it's not helping Predators fans seeing multiple players that were sold off have an impact in the playoffs with other teams. It seems each team competing right now has someone that wasn't doing what they needed in Nashville. And I asked the texter, who else besides Matt Duchene? Because I figured that was the first person the texter was wondering about. The texter also mentioned Mikael Granlund, who is also playing for the Dallas Stars, and Gus Nyquist. But if I recall correctly, Gus Nyquist went offside on a goal that cost the Wild a big game. So I don't know how effective Gus Nyquist was for the Minnesota Wild in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But I get it. I know. You know, when you're seeing Matt Duchene and Mikael Granlund with greener pastures, I suppose, although they are wearing greener uniforms because the Dallas Stars do wear green. But I don't share that sentiment personally.
Yeah. Look, I think there's a lot of draft capital that Barry Trotz has, and I think he's looked at how to use that. And he also has been saying for a long time they want to get the number one center. But it's just very rare. A friend of mine just texted me going well back into history. But remember, and Adam, this might have been a little bit before your time where you were focused on this thing, but Brian Burke of the Vancouver Canucks wheeled and dealed. This was, I think, the second year of the Predators. Wheel and deal to get both Sedins.
Yes.
You know, the Daniel Sedin and Henrik Sedin were coming out of the draft the same year. They wanted to play together. And so the Vancouver had one of the picks where they could get one of them, but they obviously didn't have the other, so they had to make a big deal to get the two. But that was kind of special circumstances. So it's so rare that those picks are gone. And so it's hard to tell. It's hard to have a reference point. It's not like the NFL draft, right, where you try to set a value of what these picks are worth. It's a little tougher to quantify, I think, year to year in the NHL when you're talking about kids that young.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, even the number one overall pick in the NHL draft has not been moved very often. I mean, the last time I can recall was what Elliot was referencing with Marc-Andre Fleury, and that was more than 20 years ago. That was in 2003.
2003, yeah.
And the year before that, in 2002, the Blue Jackets traded up to take Rick Nash at number one. The Blue Jackets traded the number three pick and the right to swap picks in 2003 to Florida for the number one pick, and the Blue Jackets took Rick Nash. So I mean, I'm not going to completely rule out the possibility that Barry Trotz could try to move up from five to two, let's say. He does have two other first-round draft picks at his disposal. Willie, where is Tampa's going to be in the mid-20s, right?
Tampa Bay, we know, will be in the top 24 because they're out.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends on how this next round falls before you know specifically where that's going to be. I would think it's probably going to be on the lower end, so probably between 20 and 24. Conservatively, I think that's where it's going to be. But it will not be lower than 24.
And Vegas is still in the Stanley Cup playoffs, so that pick will be a later pick. So I'm sure, guys, they have one of those Jimmy Johnson draft charts, the NHL version, and I don't know what the value of the Tampa Bay Lightning's and Vegas Golden Knights' pick is, what they are. You know, I'm going to ask myself this question. I don't even know the answer. Would I be okay moving both of those first round picks to San Jose to move up three spots? I mean, I don't know what the value is.
No.
I don't know if that's.
I wouldn't come close to doing that. This is just me. But I'm going to go with the same philosophy generally as what we've talked about a bunch over the last several weeks. And that is the principle of there is some randomness. There is a little bit of luck involved, as much as we think we know better than everybody else, right? That, hey, our scouts are better than your scouts. We know what we're looking for. I think time has shown that nobody knows. Nobody has the crystal ball. And so the percentages are better if you draft more guys. But that being said, I think all this draft capital, I think Barry Trotz would like to use it for something. I just don't know if I don't think it's the best play to give up a lot of draft capital to move up just three spots. That, to me, that's not a high percentage play, I don't think. Depends on how much you're talking here. But I think what might be more likely is you package some of this draft capital they have for a player that can help you right now, an established NHL player.
Yeah, I think that would be more likely scenario.
Yeah, I
think that would be more of the way to go. Nate on our text line says, while I'd like to get a top two pick right now, I'd rather have more darts to throw. I wouldn't trade first round picks. I think that's where I'm leaning as well. 615-737-1025. All right, it's time to roast Jared Stillman. It's time to take shame, Jared Stillman. We've all got bones to pick, and we'll do it next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, joined, as always, at the end of our program by the one and only Jared Stillman. Jared, I shared the take that you had with me. It was
1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2.
Hello, Jared. Can you hear us? We can hear you.
Yeah, we can hear you, Jared.
The test came through. Exactly. Jared passed the test on his end.
Yes, apparently can't hear us.
We'll get Jared.
It's like the Beastie Boys. 1-2-1-2. Exactly. This is just a test.
Come on, Jared. Gosh.
He's weaseling out of us.
Yeah, he is.
About to roast him.
A little weasel.
He doesn't want to hear what Derek has to say.
A little weasel.
That's important. I think that's what I'm implying by acting like he can't hear us.
A little weasel.
So Jared tweeted, because somebody tweeted at Jared four hours ago. We remember a couple of years ago that you absolutely trashed Mikko Rantanen as a player. How can anyone take your NHL comments seriously? He responded, Remax Rantanen is on a total heater. Not going to lie. Never seen him play like this. Except for the fact that Mikko Rantanen had back-to-back 100-point seasons a couple of years ago. It's not like this
a couple
came
of years ago. He's one of the consistent top 5 to 10 scorers in the league.
No, I agree. I'm just saying that in 2023 and 2024, he had 105 points and 104 points. Yeah. So it's like, I've never seen him play like this before. It just happened a few years ago.
Man, how soon we forget.
Oh, man. Nate just texted in, is Jared hungover? I don't know. We can ask him when the Zoom starts working.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Hello, Jared.
I'm good. I am not hungover, if that's true. Okay.
We're just roasting your Mikko Rantanen takes, which we've been doing throughout the show.
Yeah.
That doesn't really surprise me.
Right, because of how crazy your take is. You're the only guy on the earth who thinks
I shared with the class how you took me to a Predators Avalanche game a couple of seasons ago with your season tickets, and you told me that Mikko Rantanen was, quote, the Edgerrin James of the NHL.
Wow. Jared.
That sounds like something I would say.
Which was absolutely incorrect.
Which was just blatantly wrong.
Well, I've never felt like Mikko Rantanen has been this good in big moments.
Let me tell you. The players ahead of Mikko Rantanen, this is in the history of the NHL, of all players who have played at least 50 playoff games, these are the only players in NHL history who have averaged more points per game in the playoffs than Mikko Rantanen. Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and Nathan MacKinnon, your thoughts?
It's a short list of great players.
Pretty good list.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You're saying the other guys on that list aren't ringing a bell for you?
Man, here's what I would say on the Mikko Rantanen front.
You were wrong. Let's move on. Thank you.
The last two games were unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I'm not going to knock that. I'm not going to say it wasn't. I'm not going to any of that. But it's the second round of the playoffs. And the game seven was game seven, so I didn't get that. But it's the second round of the playoffs. It's like I heard you ask Elliot Friedman when he was on the show, Elliot, is this the year for the Leafs? I'm like, I've watched every game and every second of that series so far. We're kind of now Leafs
fans. It was said
tongue-in-cheek,
by the way. I know how this works with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, it's going to go seven. I've watched the two games. It's going to go seven. And so I don't get too carried away by what happens in the second round of the playoffs. Though I will say this, basketball, I haven't watched much of. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, Derek, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Celtics choking the first two nights, that's going to get me to watch game three.
Yeah, it should.
That's going to get me to.
It should get you to watch game three. It should get you to watch the Golden State in Minnesota series.
Nope,
or Denver series.
Okay, but you know what? Derek was very upset. Derek was very upset with your Edgerrin James slander.
Here's, like, Jared. Like, okay, a texter did text in and said, I think
on
one of your shows.
Hold on a second. Well, let's not let Jared off the hook.
No, forget about the rant.
Let Willie get in here first.
This was Jared's quote just now. Here's the thing about Rantanen. Let me tell you about the Toronto Maple Leafs. What does that have to do with the question about Rantanen?
It's too early.
He's the first player in 40 years with back-to-back hat tricks in the playoffs.
So what
he broke
said,
a record last night that was held early. By Mario Lemieux.
So what you saying, Willie? He just glossed over that, huh?
He's also won a Stanley Cup, by the way. It's not like he's never won a championship, Jared.
Yeah, but he wasn't the best player on that team. Like, when we think of, like, who carried the Avalanche to that cup, I mean, it was...
But that's like saying that Scottie Pippen isn't the best player on the Bulls team.
We know he's not, but he's a great player.
Yeah,
he's
but where would you
he's
rank Scottie in the 90s hierarchy?
Not Willie.
He was up there. Now.
Jared, what if I told you that Mikko Rantanen had more points than Nathan MacKinnon in the Avalanche's run to the Stanley Cup, which he did?
Don't care.
Okay.
It's because he was playing with Rantanen. MacKinnon.
This is absolutely ridiculous.
Now that segues into what I wanted to get to.
Okay, go ahead, Derek.
You actually put, like, in your scenario, You actually use Edgerrin James as your case study or your guy of saying that he benefited, like he solely benefited from Peyton Manning, or he solely benefited from Marvin Harrison or Reggie Wayne.
First of all, what you're saying? I don't believe that Edgerrin James belongs in the Pro Football Hall.
Oh my goodness! Oh, look.
I think Edge in the Hall of Fame.
Everything
ridiculous.
You say from here on out, I'm not listening to.
La la la.
Edgerrin James.
Man, listen. He was, and listen, he was voted by the people of his peers, people that we consider highly, you know, reputable in this business, that we
lean on their work. He was voted by Kaharsky.
No. We're talking about, listen, he was the NFL Rookie of the Year. He was a three-time All-Pro, four-time Pro Bowler, two-time rushing leader, 2000 All-Decade Team. That's voted by people that really know what they're talking about. NFL Rookie All-Team.
Who do you think's better, him or Corey Dillon?
Him. He's better than Corey Dillon.
I think Corey Dillon's so much better than Edgerrin James.
Oh, my goodness.
And yet, their statistics are almost identical.
Based on what?
Their statistics are almost identical. But Corey had to do it for most of his career on that crap-ass Cincinnati team.
We should have made him better.
Awful. He was doing the best he could. He beat you in a game where he ran for like 217 yards.
What did that amount to? What did that amount to? I'm saying, what did that amount to?
He was awful. That's my point.
Was he an all-decade team? Was he an all-rookie team? Was he?
You saw what Corey Dillon did at the end of his career when he
Corey Dillon. No. Listen, Corey Dillon was a damn good running back. But I am not going to sit here and say, well, and diminish Edgerrin James because you're throwing Corey Dillon. Corey Dillon was a beast, but Edgerrin James. Listen,
Corey Dillon's not in the Hall of Fame because Corey Dillon played on those terrible Bengal teams.
The accolades.
That's why he's not in the Hall of Fame.
The accolades stand for themselves. He has on that gold jacket. I don't know what you think that gold jacket means, but that gold jacket means you are one of the best players that have ever suited up and strapped on a helmet and put on some cleats. That's what that stands for.
And you're saying that simply because of that.
That's what it stands for.
Corey Dillon does not.
I'm not saying whether Corey Dillon deserves to be there or not, because he probably does. But if I'm looking at it, I've seen both of them play. Yeah, I'm taking a slight edge to Edgerrin James.
So between the two of them, Edgerrin James has 400 more rushing yards. Mm-hmm. Dillon has more yards per attempt, mm-hmm. more touchdowns, two more touchdowns. So the difference of 400 mm-hmm. yards to Edgerrin, 200 yards, or excuse me, two touchdowns to Dillon. Mm-hmm. When it came to receiving touchdowns, a difference of three. When it comes to championships, Corey Dillon won a Super Bowl. Edgerrin James did not. They both made it to the Pro Bowl four times. Mm-hmm. They had roughly the same career, but Edgerrin James was in all those playoff games because he played with Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison.
So he had nothing to do
Tony
with that.
Dungy is his coach.
So he had nothing to do with that. He was good.
He was no different than all the other running backs in that era.
He had nothing to do with that.
Deuce McAllister. He was no different.
Yes, he was. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's in the Hall of Fame.
I know, and he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame.
Why not? Based on what? No, based on what?
Based on what? The fact that he was carried by a
no, he wasn't carried. Oh my goodness.
You think Edgerrin
so if so if so if so if Peyton Manning didn't have Edgerrin James,
why did Peyton win two Super Bowls without Edgerrin James?
Because he still had a damn good running back. He had another good running back.
Who?
Who? What was the running back? Joseph Addai. Is that who he?
They did have him.
He was one of them.
I do think Addai was on the team that won the Super Bowl. Can I say one thing though? First of all, Mikko Rantanen is way, way better than either Edgerrin James or Corey Dillon. But all you're doing, Jared, is saying that Corey Dillon is underappreciated, which is a legit argument.
Yes.
But to take away from Edgerrin James as a Hall of Famer, I think that's weak.
So, again, if I'm looking at the two, just if I'm picking between Dillon and James, because I just read off their stats, and I think we can agree, they're very, very similar, right? Mm-hmm. You know, a difference of 400 yards and two touchdowns on each side. They both went to the same amount of Pro Bowls. You know, technically, Corey Dillon won a Super Bowl and Edgerrin James didn't win a Super Bowl, but they're roughly kind of the same player. But we look at Edgerrin James much differently
of course.
Than we do Corey Dillon, because Edgerrin James played with all those great players.
Well, didn't Corey Dillon play with the great Tom Brady?
I'm going to give Mikko Rantanen credit, because what Mikko Rantanen has done, you know, in these 2 years or these 2 games without Nathan McKinnon and knocking out Nathan McKinnon is far better than I thought Mikko Rantanen.
By the way, my very quick math.
Carolina won the trade.
By my very quick math, since he was traded by Colorado in the regular season and playoffs combined, he has 39 points in 41 games.
Okay.
So he's clearly not a product of a superstar. He's a nearly point per game player without Nathan McKinnon.
Hey, sometimes you got to go somewhere else to prove it. Like Tom Brady had to prove it away from Bill Belichick by winning in Tampa Bay. And I will give Rantanen credit. I did not see Mikko Rantanen having the kind of heater that he has had the last two nights. And I mean freaking heater. Now, the third goal of the first hat trick was an empty netter, but still, he's on a heater. He won them that game.
By the way, Rantanen's line mate, Mikael Granlund, your boy.
I actually did notice that.
That'll do it for us today.
Edgerrin James deserve it.
That'll do it
what
for
about
us.
Dylan?
He deserves it too, but he's not in. So hey,
he wasn't voted by his peers of Paul Kaharsky and.
Oh God, we got to get out of here. We'll be back at 11. Still in the company coming up next.
Be love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, wonderful Thursday. Peace.